You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network. If you ever played Name That Tune, the single most recognizable song ever produced in the history of music. Joining me is the single most recognized Marine on the planet, Michael Musselman, in Texas, with breaking news. Mike, what's going on? What are you doing? What happened? Gunner!
Sorry, I hit mute. Today's the final day for voting in the primary.
You were giving the report to nobody?
Yeah, it was like, my official Dan Rather voice. No, I hit mute when I was walking to the truck.
Okay, there's a top of the page on the Drudge Report right now is Dems rising, record primary turnout in Texas. Ooh, what's going on down there?
Yeah, so that's the whole, okay, so the way the Democrats work down here is they cross party.
I don't understand that.
So let's say you're a Democrat, Matt.
Yes.
Okay?
Okay.
And you want to get elected out here.
Okay.
So what you say is you never admit to being the fact that you're a Democrat. What you do is you register as a Republican. Okay?
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you can be a Republican. You can be a liberal Republican.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So then what they do is then they cross parties because they can't get elected unless you're in cities, of course, the big metropolitan areas. But out here, they cross parties. And so they'll run on the Republican ticket.
Okay.
They won't sign the Republican
pledge.
They refuse to do that. They will boycott Republican, debates because then they'll just be so. But they then all of the Democrats, the Democrats here or the liberals out here, they know that one, that conservatives don't vote, Republicans don't vote. They don't.
Why not?
They may be the majority because they think that it's not a big deal to them.
Yeah, but isn't that in what do we call these midterm elections? Isn't that always the case that the party in power doesn't turn out as well, and so you always see loss of seats and the pendulum swing back towards the middle?
Yeah, so it's the poll, blue versus red. The problem is them and liberals are congregated in the city,
yeah.
The big huge metropolitan area.
Okay.
There are more people, and people just don't understand. There's more people, that live outside the city.
Okay.
Than there are that live. And so when you look at the whole ticket, like, for instance, Hood County, let's talk about Hood County.
Okay.
55,000 people in the county.
All right.
They assume that there's only about 10% of Democrats live in this county.
Okay.
But notoriously, what happens is only 5% of the conservatives go vote, and 8 to 9% of the Democrats vote. So who wins? The Democrats.
Well, then you have
Let
me tell you, if Republican voters are that stupid in Texas, then that's what you get.
They are,
okay.
But they're starting to come awake. They're starting to awaken. They're starting to understand that if you don't. Conservatism is basically it's gonna be gone here in Texas because the number one thing that the Democrats are doing in Texas is they're trying to turn if they could turn Texas into a liberal state or at least on the front end of that
if
you get liberal senators and congressmen from Texas of all places. Then there's no hope for the country. It's gone.
It's gone? Out the window?
Yeah. Closed door, man. And the revolution's on.
Last one out, turn the light off?
No, because Texas always gets a bad rap. Everywhere you go. Because in California, people always, well, in Texas, everybody is issued a gun once you get a house, or everybody in Texas, when they're born, gets a license to carry.
We don't even talk about Texas in California. We don't even know where it is. It's like this mythical place that we see in Alamo movies. That's all we know about it.
Yeah, where America really is.
Exactly.
Where it starts.
It's just like, it's just someplace. We don't even know what it is. Do you find the news on North and South Korea going to meet for a summit in April more interesting, or the news that Paul Allen has discovered, if you will, the location of the USS Lexington? Which story do you find more interesting?
The Lexington story.
The Lexington story. This program's 3 for 3. No, nobody's interested in the North Korea story. Unbelievable.
No, I mean, because it's a big deal. I mean, you know what? Good for them. If they want to get together and forget, you know, and erase the border and have everybody walk across freely, the only person that benefits from that is North Korea.
Oh, my God. Okay, so here's the question. North Korea has been developing nuclear weapons for going on 26 years. They're on the verge of getting them, and now all of a sudden they're going to say, it's okay, we don't need these things, we'll make them go away. Do you believe that?
No. Who's saying that? What idiot is saying this?
That's what you'd be believing if you thought North Korea was going to give up its nuclear weapons. That they've done this for 26 years, they're on the verge of achieving it, and now they're going to give it up. Who believes that?
Yeah, we've uncovered the formula for world peace, but we just don't want to open it up right now.
Yeah, we'll wait till April and we'll open it up. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Just checking.
Bullshit.
Now let's talk about the Lexington. Mike and I were talking earlier, about the word discovered. The Navy knew where this thing was. Okay. In fact, I'm looking at it, the grid coordinates right now.
Well, the Latin longitude, cause they didn't use grid coordinates.
Yeah. The lat long of the,
I hate to be the guy that, you know, points that out, but.
They could have used grid, but they didn't, okay?
Yeah, they did have grid.
Right.
They had each block in a sector and everything else, but they used lat long.
They used lat long. So it was easier for the Navy to do that in terms of... And I don't know that we actually even had grids. Do we even have grids for that part of the world back then, Mike?
Yeah.
We did?
If you look at old World War II maps, like I said, each... I forget, it was either 10 degrees by 10 degrees, whatever that block was chopped into. It had a corresponding grid, and then they broke that down, broke that their ground. You know what I mean?
Yes.
But they didn't use that much, so I don't know why. But they would use it for, like, let's go search Alpha Romeo sector. You know, and that meant something. And then they'd go out there, and that's where they would do a search pattern.
Last night, I was reading about Wei. I did the battlefield study thing with Bronzy last week, and it's
HUE.
Huh?
Did you say HUE? Way?
Yeah.
Or like way, like in, oh, okay.
Way, yeah, way, HUE. As
like in, your curves and way.
As
get
in,
your curves and way, boys.
As in hue. The low point of the rededication of the battle colors. Is when the officer narrating, the captain narrating, says,
oh, no.
Exactly, she talked about the Battle of Hue. I went, oh.
No, he did not.
Yes, she
no.
did. Yes, she did.
No.
Yes, she did. You.
No, Max. Yeah, no one does that.
Oh, Hue, the Battle for Hue. I went, oh, shit.
Yes. That's what you wanted to hear. No one's that stupid.
No, I'm telling you. And I was asking.
I mean, come on. Every Marine officer learns of that battle.
Yeah. She maybe she was sick that day at the basic school, when they were studying the Battle of Hugh. So anyway, tomorrow the interview you'll hear is with Nick War. He was a platoon commander in Charlie Company 1-5, my old company. Right. He was first platoon commander. I was third. And Mike was in 1-5 weapons company.
Right.
Yeah, those guys, loser company. Anyway, so I went through the battle using Google Earth, and pretty interesting. Saw where Captain Christmas and Hotel 2-5 fought in the new city south of the old Imperial City. Their battalion commander, Ernie Cheatham, really interesting and tough fight. And then they put 1-5 on LCUs and took them up the Perfume River and brought them in from the northeast corner of the city, because the NVA and the VC attacked from west to east, so I guess they didn't tie up the northeast corner. Anyway, and then 1-5 essentially attacks north to south along the eastern side of the old Imperial City. They get to a street that is phase line green for 1-5, and at the end of the street on their left flank, there's a strong point that they don't really know about yet, but it's strong pointed by the NVA, and they have essentially grazing enfilade fire down phase line green, but 1-5 doesn't know it's there. And Charlie Company attacks three different times that day. He loses essentially 30 of his 50 Marines, and his platoon is destroyed. And so he tells the story. He tells that story and what that was like. Very, very cool. So anyway, I was bombing around on Google Earth. So I just pasted in the grid. Mm-hmm. I just pasted in the lat long on Google Earth for the Lexington. So anyway, Mike and I were.
It's in the Coral Sea.
There you go. Mike and I were talking about it earlier, and our question was, why would this be considered a grave by the Navy if they scuttled it themselves, right? And so it didn't happen the way I thought it happened. I would tell you, I looked it up. So
okay.
If you go to what happened, this is one of the first battles where ships don't see each other's in Navy history. And so the airplanes, and it's a relatively few number of airplanes, It might be for each side, there might be a total of 25 to 30 aircraft in the air, which is by later standards is not that great. And these ships, these aircraft carriers, the Lexington was built on a cruiser hull, and then they just laid the bowling alley flat deck on it. And it wasn't an angled deck carrier that would come later in our history. So they're old carriers. So anyway, let me just read a paragraph to you, and it explains why it's still considered a graveyard. Another serious explosion occurred at 1442 that started severe fires in the hangar and blew the forward elevator 12 inches above the flight deck. Power to the forward half of the ship failed shortly afterwards. Fletcher sent three destroyers, Admiral Fletcher, to assist, but another major explosion at 1525 knocked out water pressure in the hangar and forced the evacuation of the forward machinery spaces. The fire eventually forced the evacuation of all compartments below the waterline at 1600. Lexington eventually drifted to a halt. Evacuation of the wounded began shortly afterwards, and Sherman, the captain, ordered abandon ship at 1707. A series of large explosions began at 1800 that blew the aft elevator apart and threw aircraft into the air. Sherman waited until 1830 to ensure that all of his crewmen were off the ship before leaving himself. Some 2,700 officers and men were rescued by the rest of the task force. The destroyer Phelps, Mike told me this a little bit ago, was ordered to sink the ship and fired a total of 5 torpedoes between 1915 and 1952. Immediately after the last torpedo hit, Lexington down by the bow, which is the front end of the ship, but nearly on an even keel finally sank, and it gives the grid cord it. A Lexington officer famously said, quote, "There she goes. She didn't turn over. She didn't go down with, she went down with her head up. Dear old lady Lex, a lady till the last." Some 260 crewmen were killed, and 2,735 were evacuated. So the in during that day, the 216 that were killed were still on the ship. And the timeline, when Mike and I were talking earlier, you know, the Navy's decision to scuttle the ship and sink the ship, it was made very quickly. It wasn't like some ships that, that are towed away and were under power and then slowly but surely degenerate away from the fight, and the Navy can make a decision, the dead being either taken off or buried at sea. And so the timeline very compressed in terms of the way the Lexington sinks. So.
Right, it
in the news after all these years. So there you go.
Yeah, I remember. I don't know which movie it was. You know, because say the timeline for the Coral Sea. The Coral Sea happened right after, right?
The Battle of the Coral Sea.
Yeah.
No, right before. Because wait. The Battle of
Lexington was at Midway.
The Battle of Midway? No, the Battle of Midway happens later and essentially stops the Japanese advance.
Yeah, well, okay, so what year was the Battle of Midway? 1942, right?
Yeah, it's later in the year.
So the Battle of Coral Sea was after Midway. It had to be.
Battle of Midway, 4 to 7 June 1942, the Lexington.
The Lexington was at Midway.
No, Lexington sunk on the 8th of May.
It did? So what ships were at Midway then?
Stand by.
The Hornet? The Wasp? The Enterprise?
What does stand by mean to you?
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Stand by means keep running your suck?
No, stand by means stick close to you.
Exactly.
Stand by.
There was three carriers on the U.S. side, four carriers on the Japanese side. Stand by for names. American reinforcements, flight, blah, 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 blah. Enterprise and Hornet. So you were right there.
Okay.
The third one is the Yorktown.
The Yorktown.
The Yorkie. And the Yorktown would get jacked up too.
That's right.
Yeah, so there was a two carrier task force, Halsey's two carrier task force, which had the Enterprise and the Hornet. Although Halsey was stricken with severe dermatitis. What does that mean? He had a skin rash?
Malady.
he had a rash. Holy shit. He had to be replaced by Raymond Spruance.
Right.
Halsey's escort commander. Nimitz also heard the...
So Coral Sea was the first naval engagement, right?
Well, you had them down off Guadalcanal when the Japanese would come down and just light our asses up and the Navy...
But carrier battle.
Carrier battle that the two combatant battle groups never saw each other. That was
but it was a carrier battle. That was the first carrier battle was Coral Sea.
Yes. Despite estimates that Yorktown damaged at the Battle of Coral Sea would require several months of repair at Puget Sound... Her elevators were intact, her flight decks largely so. The Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard worked around the clock, and in 72 hours, she was restored to battle-ready state. Judge Goodenough...
That's crazy, dude.
...in it for two or three weeks of operations, as Nimitz required. Her flight deck was patched, whole sections of her internal frames were cut out and replaced. Repairs continued even as she was underway, repairs continued with work crews from the repair ship, USS Vestal, herself damaged in the attack at Pearl Harbor 6 months earlier, still on board. Shit.
I wish I remembered that detail because at some of the ship meetings that we had down at Third Fleet down in San Diego, why we couldn't get a ship and all that other crap, you know. Well, it's in repairs for 18 months. I would have blurted out.
Hey, boy.
The Yorktown, damaged in World War II with pure muscle and hammers and rivets, not this robotic shit that we got today, was repaired after battle damage in World War II in 72 hours. Oh, and by the way, she had to go back to Pearl Harbor from the Coral Sea and then back out to the fleet.
Oh, yeah, because by the way, she had a little engagement at an island called Midway. Not sure if you know where that is, boys, but that was the biggest
single... Yeah, let me give you a history lesson on that, yeah, you jackasses. And you're telling me that it takes 18 months for this ship to get ready? Whoa! Shit. Listen, good thing that technology has made our lives better.
Right, wrong. Listen to this, though. It gets better. Yorktown's partially depleted air group was rebuilt using whatever planes and pilots could be found. Scouting 5, VS-5, was replaced with Bombing 3, VB-3, from the USS Saratoga. Torpedo 5 was also replaced by Torpedo 3. Also, Fighting 3, VF-3, whatever the hell they flew, was reconstituted to replace VF-42 with 16 pilots from VF-42 and 11 pilots from VF-3, with Lieutenant Commander John S. Jimmy Thatch in command. Some of the air crews were inexperienced, which may have contributed to an accident in which Thatch's executive officer, Lieutenant Commander Donald Lovelace, was killed. Despite efforts to get Saratoga, which had been undergoing repairs on the American West Coast, ready for the coming engagement, the need to resupply and assemble sufficient escorts meant she was not able to reach Midway until after the battle. The Midway, on Midway, by June 4th, the Navy had stationed 4 squadrons of PBYs. PBYs are what? They can land in water.
The pontoon planes.
Yeah, they land in water for long-range reconnaissance.
Yeah. The one that Fantasy Island used to fly, right? Was that?
Yeah.
No.
That was it. No,
no, that was a different boat, was it?
No, that was it. That's a PBY.
Just repainted?
Yeah, repainted, repurposed. Zip plane. Yeah, that.
Sure.
They thought... Here's from one of my old Marines. They thought Halsey had sepsis due to skin infection going untreated, you bastards. Oh, he's a Halsey suck-up. Come on, Jason.
Yeah.
What's sepsis? Oh, I've got a rash. I got to go home. This is a battle of Midway, man. Come on. What's sepsis?
Suck it up, buttercup.
You think? What is sepsis? Sepsis is a noun. The presence of tissue of harmful bacteria and their toxins, typically through infection of a wound. Okay, Halsey never got a Purple Heart, so where'd he get a wound from? Like, a rash?
He never got wounded?
No, come on, man.
Well, the condition could be said that it brought on by the enemy because of the concern that he had. So that's the cost of stress that caused the actual, hey.
Navy medicine.
Bring this out.
Navy medicine, sure. Right there in action for you. Misdiagnosing a rash.
So put him on
light duty.
The original five aircraft carriers, the Enterprise, the Lexington, the Saratoga, the Yorktown, and the Hornet. Right? Am I correct?
I think. I'm not. That makes you a little bit of an aircraft carrier dork if you named them all by heart. I'm not saying. But
would I be? I'm a World War II dork, though. I like the rich history of World War II.
Yeah,
I mean, that's,
but who memorizes how many carriers we had?
We had 5 in the Pacific.
God.
Because they brought the, I think it was the Saratoga from the East Coast.
I'm impressed, Mike.
Did I get them all?
I'm looking. But who knows a piece of trivia like that? U.S. aircraft carriers in the Pacific at the start of World War II.
Okay. Hornet, Enterprise, Saratoga, Lexington, and New Yorktown.
Holy smokes, man.
Am I missing one?
I don't know, but there's a lot of, come on. They have, like, aircraft carriers from other countries. Wow, we had a lot of aircraft carriers.
Oh, yeah.
I don't.
I mean, after, like, in 1943, 1944, shit, we had dozens and dozens of aircraft carriers.
List of sunken aircraft carriers. United States. Holy shit.
See, now they're going to have what they call escort carriers in that category, too, though.
Explain that to everybody, because that confuses people.
Escort carriers were basically like amphibious assault ships. They were smaller. They hold less planes. And what they did was escort carriers could actually go out, and they're faster, actually. They would go out with battle groups and provide air cover in a smaller capacity. They could be chopped, you know, and made parts of real fast task groups that could go out and operate independently from the main area. But your big flat tops, you know, that was the Navy's mainstay.
Wow.
So, yeah, you had CVEs, which was your escort carriers.
All right, here you go. From start to finish, the Yorktown was sunk on June 7th, 1942, north of Midway Island. Okay, so the Yorktown sunk there. Crippled by Japanese dive bombers and torpedo bombers during the Battle of Midway, later sunk by Japanese submarine I-168 while under tow. The USS,
right.
The USS Wasp was a fleet carrier. It was
Wasp. I said Wasp earlier, though.
It was sunk by Japanese submarine I-19. The USS Saratoga was sunk after the war at Bikini Atoll during a test of nuclear weapons. The USS St. Lo was sunk by Japanese.
That's an escort carrier.
Yeah, escort carrier. Man, you are killing it. This is pretty impressive, Mike. This is exciting. I didn't know this about you. Sunk by Japanese kamikaze aircraft during the Battle of Samar. Okay. The USS Princeton.
That was a new carrier, actually.
It's called a light carrier. Interesting.
Yeah, it was a new class of carriers.
Interesting. Escort carrier had 28 aircraft. A fleet carrier had 91 aircraft, and then these light carriers had about 45. It was sunk during the Battle of Leyte Gulf by a Japanese bomber. The USS Oriskany was made an artificial reef. That was a fleet carrier. Let's see. Here's one for you. The Omamani Bay. Yeah.
Omani Bay?
O-M-M-A-N-E-Y. I've never heard of it either. Escort carrier had 28 aircraft, sunk on January 4th, 1945, crippled by a Japanese kamikaze, later scuttled by the escort destroyer USS Burns.
Must have been off Okinawa then.
In the Sulu Sea. What the hell's the Sulu Sea?
Off Okinawa.
You're just seagoing, man.
Okinawa.
You know what? I hate it. This is the most you've ever been right, for God's sakes. That is. It's off Okinawa. Which coast of Okinawa?
Yeah, it's off Okinawa. Huh?
No, it's not off Okinawa.
Yeah, it is.
I spoke too soon.
It is.
Well, that's mainland Japan, if I'm not mistaken.
No, it's north of Okinawa. Of Okinawa.
Okay.
It's like a small little.
Then it's mainland Japan. If it's north of Okinawa, which is where mainland Japan is, yes.
Yeah, I mean, but it's still Okinawa.
Okay.
It was the Battle of Okinawa that caused them to be up there in the first place.
All right. Now I've got the point in the ocean, and as I look, no, the Sulu Sea is, okay, you drive out of Manila Bay and you hang a left, so you're not even close. Now I feel better. This is better.
If you drive out of Manila Bay and hang a left, you go towards Okinawa.
No, you got to hang a right. If you hang a left, you're going down towards Australia, Malaysia, all that kind of crap.
Manila Bay.
Manila Bay in the Philippines? Have you been there? Okinawa's north of the Philippines, you butthead. You were always on post one. You weren't paying attention while you were driving around the planet. Okay.
You said if you pull out of Manila Bay and hang left.
Yeah, that's what you head to the Sulu Sea. That's where it was sunk. You got to go. It's closer to, let's see. You know all the.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
You know all the southern islands down there?
It's off of Brunei.
Yeah. Yeah, there you go. Before you get there. Yeah. Northwest of Indonesia. Okay, now we got that straight. All right, so now, next one. The Liskum Bay escort carrier.
I've heard of that one.
You have? Whoa.
Yeah. There was something that happened with that one. They're kind of unique.
What was it? If you can come up with this, I will anoint you the greatest historian of World War II ever. What is unique about it?
No, there was something.
What is unique about it?
There was something unique about it. I know. It's like, dude, it's been a while. I have a book on all this stuff. That's why it's like, it's crazy to me that it's like, I can't, there's something, like I said, I saw a documentary that covered, and it had this also in there.
Hey, hold on. Hold on. Here's another funny email. For a guy by the name of Bull, as in Halsey, to be disabled from the Battle of Midway because he had a rash? Good God, man. I thought sailors were tough back in the day. Doesn't sound good to me. Another message. Hey, Mac. Gunner's like frickin' Rain Man right now. Wow.
I'm always Rain Man, I thought.
No, you're not. You're like Dumbass Man a lot. Mac, both my sons have atopic dermatitis. Both of them wanted to be a Marine like their old man. They were denied enlistment. Skin infections can throw you into septic shock. Now I'm waiting on my grandkids to join the Corps, Semper Fi.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy was in the Navy. He's an Admiral, though. All he has to do is sign off on his own chit. Oh, Admiral. Hey, sir. His intel guy comes in for his daily ops intel. So the Japanese carriers have, they're sortied. They'll be in the vicinity of Midway. I've got an itch. Does anybody have some cream?
I got an itch. Yeah, you're right.
Carriers, whatever. This itch stuff is killing me. How am I gonna? Oh, man, this is. Who's got some steroid cream? Oh, so we'll have to fly you back to Pearl Harbor for that. But sir, we've got a battle coming up. Oh, I got to get the Pearl, man. I can't. This stuff is killing me. Come on, man. Bull Halsey. This is, like, not good because Bull almost screwed up in the Philippines, right? Remember when he chased the Japanese carriers and he went for the bait? And that's how, God.
It almost cost him the war.
Yeah. Bull, nice job. Nice job there, killer. Okay, let me tell you.
Give me a hint about the Liskum Bay, though.
If I give you a hint, it might give it away.
It's not the first. Was it the first carrier sunk by Japanese torpedoes? Strictly Japanese torpedoes?
That was how she was sunk. But I don't think she wasn't the only.
She was the first. I think there's something about her then when you said that name, I was like, shit, that there's something about the Liscombe that I'm missing. Like, there's something that goes with the Liscombe. You know what Liscombe is, though? You know where she's named it, namesake is? It's south of Alaska.
A Casablanca class escort carrier during World War II was the only ship of the United States to be named for Liscombe Bay in Dahl Island in the Alexander Archipelago of Alaska.
Yeah, I knew she was named after Alaska. That's kind of like, that's a unique name.
Is that the unique piece of information?
Yeah, I just said that.
No, that's not. You're wrong.
But I didn't know that was the unique piece, though. No, there's something more to her.
Oh, you're just playing the game now. I caught you saying, yeah, that's a unique piece. And now I said, oh, yeah. And
No. I said, when you said, no, that's not the unique piece. There's something about the Liscombe Bay. But what makes her kind of neat is the fact that she's named after a bay in Alaska. You don't hear that. Okay. No other ship is named after, like, Hudson Bay or Great Superior or Lake Superior.
We tend to do bigger things with our carriers. Although, Oriskany, what the hell is that? Okay, here's the rest of the story. On November at 0430 on November 24th, Reveille was sounded. Flight quarters went at 0550. The crew went to general quarters at 0505. Flight crews prepared the planes for dawn, launching 13 planes, including one forward on the catapult, had been spotted on the flight deck. All these had been fueled and armed. There was an additional 7 planes in the hangar that were not fueled or armed. Since this was to be the first operations for the Liscombe Bay since leaving Pearl Harbor, she still had her complete allowance of bombs in the bomb magazine, minus the bombs loaded. This included 9 2,000-pound bombs, 9 1,600-pound bombs, 24,000-pound bombs, and 9,600-pound bombs, 120 100-pound bombs, and 96...
You're not saying commas. You got to be a comma.
I know.
You said 9,600-pound bombs. A 9,600-pound bomb?
96 500-pound bombs.
Comma.
120 100-pound bombs, comma. 96... 350-pound bombs. In addition, she had 12 torpedoes loaded on aircraft on the port side of the aft hangar. So that's all laid out there to give you some sense of how much ordnance that the ship had. At 5:10, a lookout stationed at the 45-millimeter director, and he would be directing all the 40-millimeter guns. This is how they did it back in the day. On the gallery walkway at frame 160 starboard, now we're talking ship.
What's that?
At frame 160 starboard, now we're talking ship shit. All right, reported over the sound-powered telephone that he saw a torpedo headed for the ship. The torpedo struck abaft at the engine room and detonated the aircraft bomb magazine located between frames 152 and 168.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, you just heard all that ordnance, right? Causing a major explosion which engulfed the ship and sent shrapnel flying as far as 5,000 yards away. Considerable debris fell on the USS New Mexico about 1,500 yards away from the Liscombe Bay. The explosion completely demolished and killed everyone aft of the forward bulkhead of the aft engine room. That's incredible. The hangar deck after frame 110 and the flight deck after frame 101 were destroyed and missing. The forward part of the hangar was immediately engulfed in an intense fire, igniting the few remaining planes on the flight deck. All service steam compressed air, fire main pressure were lost in the remaining portion of the ship. It did not look like a ship at all, wrote Lieutenant John Dix, communications officer of the USS Hull. We thought it was an ammunition dump. She just went whoom in an orange ball of flame. At 05...
Where was this by? What island? What sea?
I have to look it up.
Was it a landing that she was part of?
No, she had sailed from Pearl Harbor.
But she was supporting what, though? What?
Hold on.
What was she supporting? Was it 1943 you said she went down, right?
She, let's see.
Operation Galvan.
On 23 November, the Japanese submarine arrives off Macon, and they rendezvous in the vicinity, I guess southwest of Butateri Island. I've never heard of that before.
But what island?
Butateri Island. Hold on.
I thought she was in Operation Galvanic or.
It's in the vicinity of Macon.
Yeah. There was a landing.
Okay.
Galvanic.
Which is Macon is north of Tarawa, so it's in that series of Tarawa, Baisio, Butateri, Macon. All right, so it's in that general vicinity, and probably going to participate in the Tarawa campaign. At 0533, only 23 minutes after the initial explosion, Liscombe Bay listed to starboard, that's the right, and then sank, carrying 54 officers and 648 enlisted men, including Admiral Mullinex, Captain Wiltsey, and Pearl Harbor hero, ship's cook, third class Doris Miller, down with her. Of the 916 crewmen, only 272 were rescued.
Jeez.
So it was the single greatest loss of life on an American aircraft carrier, which is probably an American warship in the Pacific in World War II. And if you remember this cook that they're talking about, Doris Miller, famous photos from World War II. He's a black sailor, he's a big guy, and he's a cook in the Navy. But his actions on December 7th, in terms of manning, supplying ammunition,
Medal of Honor, yeah.
So, Navy Cross.
Well, I thought you had Medal of Honor.
Navy Cross from Waco, Texas.
Hoorah.
Yeah, so, I mean, the single greatest loss of life. 644 sailors went down.
Operation Galvanic. Yeah, it was the landing at Tarawa.
At Tarawa.
The Battle of Tarawa.
Wow.
Which was what Marines?
2nd Marine Division.
That's right.
What do they call themselves? The torch?
Carrying
the torch? What do they call that? What do they call that?
I don't know. I'm not a 2nd Marine guy.
Follow me?
And the 27th, the Tropic Lightning guy.
I'm not.
27th Infantry Division.
I know there's 2nd Marine Division guys that are just swearing at us right now. But, hey, we're Blue Diamond guys, man.
Yeah, I'm a Blue Diamond guy.
Yeah,
I don't even know what their symbol looks like.
It's a torch. Come on, it's a torch.
It is?
Yeah. Don't be a dumbass.
I can't tell you, man. I swear to God, I have coins, challenge coins that are in my case.
Yeah,
I've never served in the 2nd Marine Dimension.
Nor have I. So forgive us. It's not by.
Booker Crook. Yeah, it's the love. You know, it's the love you have for your stepson or your stepson or your step. Like your stepdaughter,
your step.
They're not blood, but it's still you concerned about them.
The 2nd Marine Division earned renown in World War II, distinguishing itself at Guadalcanal, Tarawa, Saipan, Tinian, and Okinawa.
Baisio, right? That was Tarawa.
That was Tarawa.
Someone told me the name of that is actually pronounced Baisio.
Yes.
Everybody calls it BDO.
BDO. We're Marines, come on. We screw up pronunciation of everything. Insignia.
Like Camp Lejeune.
It's Lejeune. The scarlet and gold.
Don't give me this shit. You can't say, oh, it's Baisio or Baisio.
I said Baisio.
Oh, no. It's Lejeune.
No, it's Baisio. We pronounce, I mean, the morons among us, if you talk to, it's like Hugh. Yeah.
It's like BDO, yeah. That's the moron.
It's like, yeah.
What island is that? Oh, BDO.
BDO. And I'll tell you what.
Baisio.
2-5 got into some serious shit in Hugh. They did?
Shit. I can't believe she said that, dude. Man, you should have got a recording of that.
I'm sure there is one. I'm sure there is one.
That would have been like a soundbite.
But and you know what? That's the sixth step in troop leading. When you're, you know, hey, just go over all these names with us, all right? All right, Bella Woods. It's not Billy O. Woods. Hold on.
Alessio.
The scarlet and gold spearhead-shaped shoulder patch was designed and authorized in late 1943 by Second Marine Division units serving in the Pacific. The patch centers on a hand holding a torch with the stars of the Southern Cross. They ripped that off in the 1st Marine Division as a reference to Guadalcanal. Previously, a little blaze...
They were at Guadalcanal?
I didn't know that either, but yeah, evidently elements of the division were at Guadalcanal.
Wait a second.
I know,
here.
I know. But hey, hold on. From Guadalcanal campaign and the Solomon Island campaign, 4 January to 8 February 1943. So they got there for the last month.
Oh, so they were like follow-up troops.
Yeah, Second Marines reinforced Guadalcanal Tulagi landings, 7-9 August. So they were there for 2 days. Captured. No, you know what? I take that back. The 8th Marines was part of Guadalcanal. Yeah, that's no shit. They don't get written about very much, but
but they were underneath the 1st Marine Division's command.
Correct. Elements of the 2nd Marine Division participated. But the 2nd Marine Division did not, so is that a ripoff?
That's a ripoff, dude. You cannot claim that.
The division did. They straight up yanked it. Because when I saw the Southern Cross, I was like, that's the Southern Cross, unless I'm mistaken. Because it's on the 1st Marine Division patch. It's on the Blue Diamond. And I'm like, really? So, because they fought in the Pacific. Then you see Guadalcanal. And have you ever heard the 2nd Marine Division on Guadalcanal?
No. That's why when you said that, I was like, wait a second.
But
Are you sure that that's the Southern Cross?
Stolen valor by another Marine Division. They just drive by on our Constellation. God damn it.
Just because they chopped some units there, they claim that?
You know what, Mike? We could take this up. You know, we have a buddy that's going to take over that thing. We could, during his speech, we could stand up and say, whoa, we have something we'd like to settle right now with everybody here.
We want some clarification on the Southern Cross.
Yeah, we're Blue Diamond guys, and we're calling bullshit on the Southern Cross on your division emblem. Who the fuck? You'd have all kinds of shit
going.
Dude,
we'd be strung up.
There'd be a brawl that breaks out right there on the parade deck. Get on, boys! Get them, boys! Oh, my God. That would be awesome. That would be...
Yeah, that would be funny, but I don't know if I'd do that.
Mike, come on. It would be hilarious. Hey, I know... Who's in charge of the patch around here? Who? You?
Who's the patch guy? Who's the historian?
Who's
the hair officer?
That guy, fat guy. Okay.
No. There's the reason, Mac. Who does historian stuff for units? Air officers.
Yeah, always.
So there's an air officer in World War II that was working for the 2nd Marine Division. They had to get his historian report in. And so it was a rush job. No one proofed it. They got to, yeah. That's how it happened. An air officer. See how it always comes around? It's full circle.
Yeah, I know. Always. We have to get to the bottom of that. Because the division didn't fight there. So how do they... Because one of your units did?
Or what are they saying? Because they fought... I can't understand if they say they fought in the Southern Hemisphere, because they did, but not claim Guadalcanal.
Yeah, they claim it. I'm looking at their official on their Marine Corps page, 2nd Marine Division. Follow me.
Dude, I'd write a rebuttal.
I would like to.
And, wait a second, another they're copying the army, because that's the army's thing, is follow me.
Yeah, that's it. That's the army infantry, follow me.
Yeah, and they got a freaking bronze statue down in Benning that's older than the freaking 2nd Marine Division that says follow me. So they
have a history.
They have a
history of just thieving from everybody.
A plagiarism.
2nd Marine Division.
I'm glad I'm finding this out now.
Unbelievable.
Out of the Marine Corps. Had I found this out at the division or 1st Marine Division, man, this would have been a topic of discussion.
That would not
at one of our meetings, our big meetings in Quantico with the Commandant.
Should we talk?
I move to strike the words follow me and the Southern Cross on the division pass.
Yeah, we look, there's a rivalry between the two divisions, no doubt. Who did the march up? Which division did the march up?
1st Marine Division.
Okay. Was 2nd Marine Division there?
Task Force Tarla.
All right. And then who stayed in Iraq?
They came uninvited. They were uninvited.
Who went back?
They showed up.
Who went back to Iraq?
A regiment showed up. Yeah. They got their own, they bought their own flight seats on their aircraft, commercial, found some unwary merchant marines to ship their goods across the sea, and they showed up at our doorstep.
There you go.
But it was Fighting 5th, Joe Dunford, 5th Marine Regiment, that was leading charge, brother.
The 5th, the 1st, and then Task Force Tarawa was what regiment, 2nd?
No, I think it was 8th Marines, was it?
I have to double check. Anyway, so
they're
coming back.
They fought in Nazaria.
Yeah, they're coming back in 2008. 2005, we're starting to do pre-deployment site survey and stuff like that. And they became known as the B team. Hey, what's going on?
I know, that was bad, man. That was bad. That was. But you know what? I'll tell you what, Mac. They redeemed themselves because later on, it was actually better to work for 2nd Marine Division than it was 1st Marine Division.
What?
Yeah. There was
Slap your ass.
Nope. The 1st Marine Division, when they were there, they were horrible.
Well, let me tell you, it has everything to do with who runs it and how they do it,
yeah,
right, Mike? Because we had the same issue with 3rd MA and then with 2nd MA.
Oh.
Right?
Oh, don't get me started with the MA.
Yeah, we're West Coast guys in the Marine Aviation Wings. We were not fans of the 3rd MA and the way they did business. And then the 2nd MA showed up, and it was like the skies got clear, the sun came out.
Well, they were willing to fight at the OK Corral.
They were like,
let's go, boys.
You could hear the angels singing in heaven. You're like, what just happened? And it was night and day different. So it's all people driven. All right, man.
We got to get to the bottom of the Southern Cross and the Follow Me stuff. That one really kind of like, someone needs to explain themselves.
Someone, and we are going to have a guy who could change it all, too. We'd like to.
Yeah. I bet you someone's listening right now going, shit, those two idiots figured it out.
Somebody, after all these years, you took two knuckle-dragging idiots and they figured it out.
Yeah. And they're going to silence us.
No, so you know what they're going to say? Easy explanation, boys. Easy explanation. It was a rush job. What? Yeah.
No, they probably had observers.
Yeah. We had some people down there, and we were there. You guys might not like it, but we don't give a shit. So the Southern Cross, we thought that looked cool on that blue patch. So we redesigned the patch, put a spear on it, changed the color, because Marine Corps color is actually red, so we threw that on there. And then we were looking like, what should our motto be? And this thing had to be in the next day. Somebody said, let's lift Army Infantry's motto. And then because you know it had to be an aviator running it, because if any infantryman would have heard follow me, what would they have said? Oh, fuck no, that's the Army Infantry. We can't be that.
Yeah.
That's how you know that aviators, Mike's right. Aviators were all over this. All right. We'll do some we'll do some investigating. All right.
We have to.
All
right, man.
All right, later.
I will talk to her.
There you have it. Investigative journalism, Michael Musselman from Texas. You know what? One of the best parts of being in the Marine Corps is talking shit. Oh, my God. Who knew Halsey had eczema? He had a skin rash, and that's why he wasn't at the Battle of Midway. Come on, man. Yeah, that's one of my old Marines is listening. He's a Halsey guy. Who knew? Lucky I didn't know that at the time. Yeah, he'd got his pro cons reduced for that shit. All right, that'll do it on a funny ending Tuesday. Mike, is he funny or what? It is true though. When you hear "Follow Me," you're like, "Hey, that's Army Infantry, man. They've been that forever." Yeah, statues and shit down at Fort Benning. Follow me! Yeah, so we're sitting in a planning session like, what's our motto going to be? Follow me! Yeah, we can't do that, man. Fort Benning, they already locked that one up like decades ago. We don't care, we need one for by tomorrow. Alright, where do I sign? Hey, what's this Southern Cross thing on it? Division wasn't there. Yeah, 8th Marines was. That's good enough. Plus, it looks cool. All right, got it. All right, it's signed. Get it out. What's next? They had bigger things. They had bigger things to do than to spend a lot of time on patches. I guess maybe I should have to have... How about if we track down the historian for the division? Do they have such a thing? Division historian? I've never... Who would know? Steeped in the history, I know who would know. Charlie Niemeyer could find out. Just got done at the Marine Corps Historical Division. I'm going to call him. All right, have a great day. You're going to hear Grant Newsham coming up today. My thanks to him for coming on short notice after breaking news overnight that... The Koreans are going to sit down and talk. So one of two things. Either Kim Jong-un slipped and hit his head, and now after 26 years of development, at the 11th hour and 59th minute, he's going to say, yeah, we don't need these nuclear weapons. I'm ready to give them up. Or John Bolton's right, a sucker's born every minute. So Grant Newsham hopped on the tail end of that, and we talked to North Korea, looked into the crystal ball, talked about the things that the United States has to do, which is don't let up on the sanctions. And then after that, see where the talks take you, because you're obligated to do that kind of thing. But if past performance is any indication of future returns, yeah, don't go for your wallet yet. And then Major Chad Buckle, United States Marine Corps, has written a series of 6 articles. Yeah, that's, I mean... Dude's on fire. He owns the Marine Corps Gazette right now. So anyway, Buckle wants the Marine Corps to change the way it builds infantrymen from the ground up. He says our future wars are going to rely on smaller units that need to be more lethal. And we, to that end, we need to change the infantry contract to make it a 4 or 5 year contract. Because the first year you're going to spend in training. And then the product that's going to get delivered to the operating forces is going to be a high-quality product. Capable of not novice work, but professional work. So, interesting stuff. You'll hear him today. And then, don't miss the gunner. The gunner flashes a lot of brilliance today. I have to give it to him. His command of World War II aircraft carrier history, truly impressive. So, have a great afternoon. Don't touch that dial. All Marine Radio continues right now.